Support for This American Life comes from Indeed. Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need a person with the right background who can move your business forward. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes with Indeed-sponsored jobs. Receive a $75 sponsored job credit with Indeed-sponsored jobs at Indeed.com/American. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hi, everybody. Ira here. My voice is weird today. I feel fine. Heather loved being Mormon till she and her husband split up. After that, she says, people in the church treated her and her kids differently. She realized she would never have the perfect Mormon family. She was still a believer, but she started secretly doing things that members of the church aren't supposed to do. She slept with men she wasn't married to. She drank. But on the surface, she kept up appearances, lived a double life for years before she quit the church. A double life with occasional moments where she thought she might get found out.
You know, as a Mormon person, you're not supposed to drink coffee. And that seems fairly innocuous, fairly simple. But I was slipping and I was drinking coffee, and I had gotten myself a coffee before I picked up my kids from school, and they were young enough that they wouldn't understand or get it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh my gosh, yeah, and my friend saw me and like waved and started to walk over to the car.
Saw you come out of a coffee shop?
Nope, she just saw me in the carpool line standing there, but I had a hot coffee in my car and it was fall, and that meant like if I unrolled the window, the smell of coffee was going to waft out right and smack her in the face. And so I started to panic and I unrolled the window, and I can remember like the panic, and you just learn to lie so easily and so quickly. And I think I said, oh, I'm not drinking it. I just love the smell in fall. Don't worry. Don't worry. I just love the smell. And she accepted that and said, oh, I do too. Isn't it so tempting? And we both just kind of sat there. Like, obviously, I didn't buy a coffee for the smell. You know, it was just a conversation that was completely fake, and we both engaged in it.
And so when she said, oh, it's so tempting, did you take it as her saying, this is our secret, you know, I love you, we're good?
I took it as her saying, I'm going to pretend to believe your lie because it's an easier path for both of us. And I think my kids probably did that a lot too, pretended to believe my lies.
This is actually why I wanted to talk to Heather. Our show today is about how different members of the family perceive the same events differently. And what was happening inside Heather's family during those years seemed like such an extreme example of that, because she was trying to deceive her kids. She was raising three daughters on her own, raising them in the church, she says, to be the perfect, pure vessels of Mormonism for their future husbands. Her words, not mine. This was partly because it was the only way she knew how to be a mother. But also, Heather loved her own childhood growing up in the church. She wanted to give that to them. And Heather wasn't just still a believer. She's the kind of try-hard, can-do believer who became Relief Society president in her ward, which meant that she ministered to the women in about 150 families. Heather stood at a pulpit every Sunday, teaching Mormon doctrine. And she did that knowing that her kids sometimes saw her break the rules. Like, for example, after her divorce, she stopped wearing the special Mormon undergarments that adults are supposed to wear. Her kids knew that she didn't wear them,
because they would see me change and I didn't have them on.
And do you remember any moments where they saw this and they asked?
No, they never asked. They never said a word.
What do you make of that?
I don't even know what to make of that. First, I feel like they probably felt confused. And also, I would think resentment, because I was a strict mom and I held them to the standard of appearances at church. And I was, you know, I taught from the pulpit, I taught gospel doctrine. And then for them to go home and see that the words coming out of my mouth did not match like the simplest of actions, like the type of underwear I was wearing.
Do you think that they weren't saying anything? Because it's just one of those things when you're a kid sometimes where
you don't even know what it means, but you just know, like, don't go there.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what it was. I think it was laden with meaning, and so they knew not to ask.
Mostly, Heather tried to keep things on the down low from her kids. She kept a bottle of vodka hidden in the house, high on the third shelf of a closet with sweaters and other clothes that she was sure the girls didn't go into. And she says there were no visible clues of her secret life in the house.
Until my business partner bought me a Keurig.
Keurig, the little coffee maker.
The little coffee maker, the counter coffee maker. And I immediately went out and bought a tier with, like, all of the herbal teas and hot chocolates, because those are kosher. Mm-hmm. And I made sure that those were on display. And, like, for years, every time someone would come to my house, the first thing I would do is, like, gesture to the Keurig, to the coffee maker, and say, we love this for hot cocoa for the kids. Like, I would lead with that because it was just such, to me, a blaring, you know, symbol of rebellion and slipping.
Where were the coffee pods hidden?
They were deep in the pantry in, like, honestly, it's a Cheez-Its multi-pack box because, like, with the kids' lunches, mm-hmm. you get the bigger boxes and then mm-hmm. you could just take out all the single serves and you just put them in it.
And then was the scheme that, like, once the kids were off at school, you were home alone and you could put the little Keurig capsule in and make yourself a coffee?
I was doing it first thing in the morning.
You would do it first thing in the morning.
Yeah, I was doing it first thing in the morning and they could smell it. And it's, I don't know how to explain it. It's like, I assume they wouldn't know what it was because they had never been exposed to it. They didn't see coffee at their friends' houses. They didn't.
Oh.
Like,
it didn't
this
even
is
occur
the world.
To me.
They, it's not like coffee
was. They don't
was
live in a world
they
with
don't
coffee.
Live a, coffee, a world with coffee. So you can get away with lying about a lot of things.
Oh, so your 10-year-old isn't smelling coffee and thinking it's coffee. Your 10-year-old is smelling coffee and just thinking.
It's a smell. And I mean, she might have been making the connection all along, but it was a don't ask, don't tell, don't acknowledge policy.
Your oldest is Ashley?
She's, yeah, Ashley. No. She's 22 now.
Oh my God, I want to ask her.
Yeah, you should.
So I reached out to Ashley. It was 12 the year they got the Keurig. Her little sisters were 9 and 8. She came into the studio, and from the moment I brought up the Keurig, her memory was totally different from her mom's.
Guess who gave her the Keurig?
Who?
Me.
Heather, as you heard, remembers it was her business partner. But Ashley said no. She had money she'd earned babysitting. It was the first big grown-up Christmas present she ever bought her mom.
I can't believe she didn't tell you that I was the one that got it. It was a big deal. I, like, saved up my money to get her this Keurig.
And when you bought the Keurig, what did you think it was for?
For coffee.
Ashley said she got the idea for this at her friend Elsha's house. Elsha and she were best friends and debate partners. And their moms got to know each other and went into business together. Elsha's family was ex-Mormon. So Ashley would see Elsha's parents drink coffee or go to the store or the gym on Sunday, which Mormons aren't supposed to do on the Sabbath. And they seemed normal and happy, and those things did not seem harmful to their family at all.
Like, I was so fascinated by, like, having a glass of wine at dinner, like, seeing parents just, like, having a glass of wine at dinner, and I don't know how to explain it. It felt cool, like, very cool, and, you know, I want my family to be like this. Like, I was with them a lot growing up, and having a Keurig in the house was so normal, and seeing that, I'm like, why can't we have that, you know?
So you bought it for your mom, understanding, my mom drinks coffee, I'm buying this for her so she can have coffee.
Yes. Like, I want you to drink coffee. Like me buying her a Keurig, I think she kind of thought, oh my gosh, like, Ashley understands me. Like, I'm, you know, seen by my daughter and supported in a way. Like, it wasn't, you know, I was mm-hmm. on the same wavelength. Like, yeah, let's get a Keurig.
She had no idea that her mom didn't remember it this way at all. But she said she was so young. It was really possible that she never told her mom, this is for you to drink coffee. I know you drink coffee.
Honestly, because I was 12. Like, I don't, I guess I wouldn't up and say that, you know?
So you think what might have happened, I just am trying to get this straight. So you think, like, you might have given her the Keurig, understanding what the Keurig is for, but she didn't get the hint.
I think maybe that's what's going on here. Yeah. or she didn't want to believe that I saw that side of her.
Oh, that's so interesting. She couldn't understand what you were trying to show her because she wasn't ready for it?
Yeah.
I mean, your mom said to me that you and your sisters were properly raised Mormon children, and she was betting on the fact that you hadn't been exposed to coffee at friends' houses or elsewhere. So when you would smell coffee at home, you guys wouldn't even know it was coffee.
Oh, she said that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think she's underestimating what I knew about the world at that time.
So, Ashley and her mom were in this situation where they each saw why the Carrick arrived very differently, but at the time, each of them thought they both saw it the same way, which is so weird that I wondered about Ashley's sisters. Again, they were 8 and 9 when the Keurig arrived. We called her youngest sister.
Hello?
Blue?
Who remembers the Keurig this way?
We only used it for, like, hot chocolate and... I don't think she used it for coffee at all.
So when Ashley got her the Keurig, as far as you understood, that was a machine for cocoa.
Yes.
Hot chocolate machine.
Your mom explained to me that she was drinking coffee out of it all the time, and she was just betting on the fact that, like, you just didn't know what coffee smelled like. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, no, that could definitely be true, because I didn't know what coffee smelled like, and I didn't notice at all, so that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, your mom said she was drinking coffee in the house all the time, making it all the time.
What? Wow, yeah, I had no idea. That's mind-blowing to me. Yeah, I totally thought she only started drinking it, like, a couple years ago. Or, I mean, when we left the church.
Can I blow your mind with one other piece of information?
Yes, please.
Ask your sister Ashley if she knew.
Did you know, Ashley?
Yes. I'm like actually mind blown that you thought that she just started drinking coffee like a few years ago. You had no idea?
No.
What?
Yeah, what? Wait, that's crazy. Yeah, because I thought it was such a huge sin. Mom would never do that. That's crazy.
Oh my gosh, this is blowing my mind.
Yeah, I'm mind blown. I can't believe that.
I'm dead.
That's insane.
This is as good a time as any to tell you that Heather is on a TV show. If you know the show, I'm guessing that maybe you've already figured that out. Heather is Heather Gay, one of the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, kind of an audience favorite from that show. And one of the things that comes out on that show, and in two books that Heather's written, is the shame that she sometimes still feels, the fear of judgment, which is not following the church's rules. What was interesting about talking to Heather's three kids, I also talked to her third daughter, Georgia, was that they felt none of that. None. They'd always seen themselves as one of those Mormon families that bends the rules. They'd always stopped to do things like pick up Mexican food after church on Sunday, even though you're not supposed to get takeout on Sabbath. Their mom not wearing church undergarments wasn't a big deal to them. They thought that rule was silly anyway. Ashley always figured she and her mom both felt hemmed in by the church.
I just understood her, you know. I could see that it just wasn't her, you know, that she wanted something different.
Ashley and I picked up the phone one more time to call her mom.
This is like the best day ever. I'm really enjoying this.
Hello?
And Ashley told Heather what she told me, that she was the one who bought the Keurig. And that she did it knowing that her mom drank coffee, trying to say, go ahead, drink coffee, at home, that's fine with me. This, of course, was news to Heather.
I don't know why it's making me emotional. It feels like you're kind of giving me permission to, you know, be myself. And I didn't know all of that behind it. I didn't know that.
You didn't? That makes me want to cry, too.
I did.
I can't believe we never had that conversation. That was totally, like, totally what it was.
I felt like I couldn't embrace it because I felt somehow that I was letting you down, letting the church down, letting down your sisters by being like brazen in something that I wasn't allowed to drink. And a good mom doesn't have a Keurig. And I was already a bad mom because I'd gotten divorced, and I was already a bad mom because I was working. I was just trying to like cling to the standards that I thought, you know, that I'd been told to find a good person from a bad person.
But it's funny, with by giving you the Keurig, Ashley is trying to say, like, I know you drink coffee. Do you think you just weren't ready to hear that from Ashley?
I wasn't ready to hear that from, I didn't admit it to myself. So definitely wasn't ready to hear it from my daughter, who I, you know, was supposed to like keep shielded from all of those things. And when I say keep shielded, not from coffee, but from my, you know, failings.
Oh no, Mom, I just, that breaks my heart that you, it all breaks my heart, but I just always, yeah, I've understood you, and I feel like we were in the same boat. And when you finally were like, guys, I don't want to go to church anymore, I felt this sense of relief for myself, but also for you, that you don't have to live a lie just for us, you know?
Yeah.
And it started with the Keurig.
Started with the Keurig, the gateway. Wait, I still have that Keurig.
Still
use it.
That's the same one? Keurig. Wait, that makes me want to cry. The Keurig.
10 years old.
People in the same family, people who live under the same roof, can see things so radically differently. Even simple things like a coffee maker. Today on our program, we have another very loving family, two parents, two kids, and they're in this situation, living through the same events, seeing the exact same things that they all have very different takes on. They try to get on the same page, but it's hard. From WBEZ Chicago, this is American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Stay with us.
Support for This American Life and the following message come from Dataiku. Enterprises are sometimes under pressure to launch hundreds of AI applications when their data teams are stretched thin. They end up mired in slow development cycles and siloed systems. That's where Dataiku comes in, the universal AI platform that makes building AI apps accessible to anyone, with low-code tools that drive real-world impact from data. Visit dataiku.com/TAL. dataiku.com/TAL.
Support for This American Life comes from GoodRx. Cold and flu symptoms got you down? Find relief with GoodRx. You could save an average of $53 on flu treatments. Plus, save on cold medications, decongestants, and more. Easily compare prescription prices and instantly find discounts of up to 80%. GoodRx is not insurance, but works with or without it and could beat your copay price. Save on cold and flu prescriptions at goodrx.com/TAL.
It's This American Life, Act 1, A House Divided. There's a spot in Mackenzie and Bella's house that's perfect for eavesdropping on their parents. A small sitting nook on the second floor at the top of the stairs. Where the parents are downstairs talking in the kitchen or in their bedroom, sound travels up, making its way through the stairwell.
So you can hear everything that's going down. Or you sit in the rocking chair that's right across the door. So it's like they'll have the door closed and you can hear murmurs. We're kind of in the shadow. Like, I know what's going on, but I don't know exact things.
That's Mackenzie. She's 17. The girl's parents, Jenny and Fidel, almost never fight. They're one of those families that like spending time together. They do arts and crafts together, go on road trips and don't kill each other. That kind of family. The girls are close to their parents. So all this disagreement is abnormal in their house. But since last November, when President Trump won the election, they've been in a stalemate over whether Fidel should self-deport, return to Mexico, where he hasn't lived in 30 years. The girls exist on the periphery of this stalemate, living their high school lives during the day, dipping in and out of their parents' discussions at home at night.
sometimes, like, I'll be upstairs and they'll be discussing stuff, and, like, I'll turn down my music to make sure that I'm not going crazy thinking about what they're talking about, because they seem to be, it's important.
Here's Bella. She's 15.
Every once in a while, when I'm, like, watching TV or something and I'm sitting on the couch, I'll, like, pause my show and I'll, like, listen in for a few minutes, and then I'll be like, okay, cool. That's what's happening. And then I'll turn my show back on and, yeah.
One of our producers, Valerie Kipnis, was interested in how families are making this decision over whether to self-deport, and especially the families where people do not agree on what to do or how to handle this. She's been following the Reveres for most of this year. The parents were definitely, emphatically, not in agreement. They live outside Raleigh, North Carolina. Janet Rivera is a high school math teacher. She's a citizen, born here. Which you might think would mean that her husband, Fidel, who's from Mexico, would have a path to citizenship. But there's a long-standing part of immigration law. Fidel crossed into the States illegally back when he was 18, left, and came back into the States. And because of that, he cannot get citizenship through Jenny until he spends 10 years living outside the United States. So he's been living in the U.S. without legal status for 30 years. And for most of this year, he's been in a prolonged, high-stakes dispute with Jenny over whether to stay here. Valerie wanted to see how making this decision would reverberate around the walls of this one house. Not just how Jenny and Fidel would figure out what to do, but how their kids, Bella and Mackenzie, would deal with the stress of this choice that was being discussed for months and could upend their entire lives. Here's Valerie.
In spite of being incredibly close, Mackenzie and Bella are a classic case of opposites. Mackenzie has a high, girly laugh, long hair, gold hoops, a senior in high school. Bella, just 2 years younger, wears baggy shorts and a soccer jersey and pitches her voice lower in this, yeah, whatever way when she speaks. Here's Bella.
I just like to sit in my room and exist. Like, honestly, I'm sitting on the couch watching TV, and then she comes and blocks my view and is like, is this outfit good? Like, do these shoes match this outfit? Like,
does my hair look good?
Yeah. But yeah. But I'll be honest with her. I'll tell her if her, like, hair looks frizzy or something, but
yeah.
On cue, Bella points to her big sister's neck, where her necklace has gotten tangled.
Your necklace is, like...
Okay, thank you, queen.
Upstairs are the girls' bedrooms and a little hangout area. Downstairs is the site of their parents' disagreement about whether their dad and the family should leave the country, what the girls have been calling the situation.
Could you tell me about some of the moments that it has come up?
Like, about the situation? I think that most recently, it's just been, like, every day. It's mostly because, like...
Is she singing? She's singing.
Yeah, she's singing.
The person singing in the background is their mom, Jenny. She's in the room next door, wearing noise-canceling headphones, singing the 2015 hit single, Fight Song.
Okay. Well, she does that a lot,
actually.
Every
once in a while, I'd be sitting upstairs, and then I hear her voice coming through the floor, and I was like, what is happening? I thought it was like a ghost in my room, like...
Because my grandma told her it's a good way to distract your mind.
Yeah.
So she does that by singing.
Jenny's been singing a lot this past year, ever since Donald Trump won the election, because she's stressed about Fidel. She just wanted him to make a plan. Either he should move to Mexico, or they should move together as a family. The one thing they couldn't do, from her perspective, was to keep doing what they had been for the last 16 years, living under the radar.
That wasn't working for me anymore. Just doing what we're doing wasn't working. I needed to have a plan in place in case something happened.
Jenny is a rule follower. For 16 years, she worried when Fidel drove to work without a license that he'd get into an accident and their insurance wouldn't cover it. Or he'd get stopped by police and end up in detention. The only way Jenny had been able to sleep at night was because a lawyer had told them that if Fidel got picked up in that situation, it wasn't hopeless. They could go in front of a judge and argue for Fidel. He's got a great job, no criminal record, dad of two, married to a U.S. citizen. Maybe they could make their case for him to stay.
We had one card to play. That's what I call it. It's just like we had one ace in the hole that we could play.
In Trump's second term, that option would probably go away. And if Fidel got picked up, he'd probably be detained and deported. Jenny couldn't see a path forward. Fidel, however, saw it differently. Trump hadn't even taken office yet. He thought she was overreacting.
It's like, are you crazy? I'm not going to go nowhere. It's even like I told her, it's like, I'll be here for 30 years and it's nothing happened. It's like, I never be in the jail. I never be in bad accident. I just go to work and coming back. What you need to worry about too much? You know, always thinking like, I'm going to prove you wrong. It's not going to happen. No.
When I first started talking to Fidel and Jenny over the phone, this is where they were, at an impasse.
Right now, she's the one. Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I think some of part of my brain is like a lack or something.
Because you feel like there's time pressure?
Yeah, the time and the...
And his wife is driving him nuts.
And my wife's driving me nuts. So my wife is...
getting mad because he's sticking his head in the sand.
Yeah, I stick my hand in the sand. But like I say, I try to not think in that way. But like I said, we are totally different persons.
These are the conversations the girls were overhearing. Fidel and Jenny have been married 17 years, happily. They met salsa dancing. He stepped on her foot. She said, you owe me an ice cream. They spent the night talking at Denny's. These days, they still salsa dance in the living room and corner off weekend mornings just for talking. When I ask Fidel to describe who's who in the relationship, this is how he frames the answer.
I always tell her it's the positive and the negative. Yeah, it's the positive and the negative.
Because you're an electrician. It's like funny that you're saying positive and negative because that's...
Yeah, it's like how the battery works, how the cars works, right? You know, because I always think positive, you know, but she always looked the reality. She's the one, you know, saving money. She's the one make sure everything in the house works. All the paperwork is right. Make sure the girls got the right school.
Jenny posts to-do lists around the house. He executes, crossing each item off as he goes along. That's how they both like it.
He is the fun dad. He does all the fun things. He takes the kids out for ice cream and he spoils them. And if it's the disciplinarian, that's me. He is not the disciplinarian at all.
Fidel's style is more to try and tease the girls into listening to him. For instance, Mackenzie likes to wear short shorts. So one day Fidel said, hey, if you're going out like that, I'll do it too. He grabbed scissors and cut off the bottom of his t-shirt and made it into a crop top. Then he reached for his shorts.
I cut them and I stuck it up all the way up. Like, I stuck it up all the way up. It's like, hey, you gotta go to the street like that? Hey, let me go too. We can go together.
Was she embarrassed? What'd she say?
She said, I'm not going to go with you like that.
My dad is like, he's like very like obnoxious.
Isabella is always, you annoying me. Even Jennifer said, stop being annoying. And even my guest said, you're going to stop annoying. It's love. I don't know, it's annoying to them, but it's love.
In January, on the first day of President Trump's second term, he declared a border emergency, moved to end birthright citizenship, and suspended refugee admissions. Within weeks, the TV was full of ads. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem telling immigrants,
leave now. If you don't, we will find you, and we will deport you. You will never return.
Jenny had tried to find out everything about the Trump administration's plans. She'd read about Project 2025 and worried that if Fidel got picked up, he'd get stuck in a detention center and it would ruin their lives. She'd heard horror stories, people being treated cruelly, getting abused. She couldn't stop picturing Fidel in there, in a cell with nowhere to sleep, no way to call. What if he came out a completely different person than he went in? She didn't want that for her sweet goofball of a husband. And would they have to spend their life savings to get him out? One couple they were friends with, the husband had gotten picked up.
they are over $50,000 in debt to attorneys. So you have destroyed, absolutely destroyed this couple's life.
But Fidel told her he was willing to take the risk. He wanted to stay.
And I said, so what do you want to do if you get picked up? Tell me what that looks like. So if we're just going to take our chances and we're going to stay, what happens if you get picked up? During that conversation, he said, I don't want you to spend any money to get me out if he were to get picked up for anything. And I told him that he needed to tell his children that, because if something were to happen, they would never forgive me. They would never forgive me for leaving him in there. Even if it was a decision that he and I made together, they would never forgive me because I'm the fixer for all these kind of things.
Fidel felt that unless ICE was here, like in their small suburban town an hour outside Raleigh, North Carolina, there really wasn't much to worry about. He figured the odds were with him. While they were having these conversations last winter, ICE had arrested less than half of 1% of the 14 million undocumented people in the country. Besides, Trump was still saying that he was going after criminals, and Fidel didn't see himself as a criminal. He was a tax-paying dad, a successful electrician, helping build public schools in the area. If Fidel got detained and deported, it'd be disastrous. But it was just so unlikely. Jenny wasn't going to wait around for Fidel to agree with her, to make a plan. She started prepping on her own, holed herself away in her home office, and got to work, putting together these massive purple binders of pay stubs, receipts, paperwork.
His birth certificate, a copy of all of his passports and identification, just copies of our tax returns.
Hundreds of documents in the case of his arrest or detainment that she could use to prove that Fidel had been here, working, not committing crimes, for the past 30 years. She labeled the binders in case of emergency. Fidel found it all a little bit
annoying, like she wanted me to go, you know, like she wanted me to go.
Did it hurt your feelings, this idea that she might want you to go?
I guess, yes, you know, like, yes, like, why do you want me to go? It's like, my life is in here. It hurts.
Did you ever tell her that it hurt your feelings?
No, I think it's like a, it's like a proud, how you say, proud thing. I'm not going to tell you what hurts, you know.
Mackenzie and Bella could understand both parents' arguments over whether he should go, but it was easier to side with their dad. He was saying there was nothing to worry about. Everything was fine and things could stay the same.
Me and Bella both swayed to the side of keeping my dad in the United States.
We kind of just didn't want him to go, so we kind of like just, I don't know if we like avoided it more, like we just like didn't really think about it, I guess.
It'd be a shadow, and I definitely feel like it would come out, though, when we were, like, at home. And, like, if it we weren't doing anything, if we were being a family, it would be like, oh, this might come to an end.
They'd been sitting with some version of this dread for over 5 years. They first learned that their dad might have to move to Mexico back in 2020, when Donald Trump was running for a second term. They were in 5th and 7th grade, and their mom, Jenny, was scared of what Trump would do with immigration in a second term and felt like she had to prepare the girls, who at that time had no idea at all that their dad was undocumented or that he might have to leave. Of course, this was life-altering news.
I was crying.
Yeah.
I know that.
Were you crying too?
Yeah. Definitely.
I distinctly remember trying to hide the fact that I was crying by, like, putting my hand right here, and then I would, like, lay down on, like, the desk with my arm like that. Like, I did not want to be crying. So, yeah. Thing is just, I don't like the feeling of, like, it on my face, really. So when I try to cry, I try to, like, get it before it gets, like, down to here area, so.
Their parents asked them not to tell anyone, which made this big news feel even heavier. Suddenly, they felt different from the other kids at school.
Things started to also just make more sense. Because, like, also people, like, describe, like, when you're married, like, the man's supposed to drive. And then I'm like, oh, but like my dad doesn't drive. Like, and then it's like, oh, that's probably why, because he doesn't have a license.
Fidel does drive, but when the family's together, Jenny's the one who drives.
I started understanding why we didn't travel as much. Like, I heard my friends all the time saying they traveled to like Canada or like Europe or whatever. I don't know what a 5-year-old's doing in Europe, but whatever. But it was like, I could hear them traveling, and I was like, why don't we ever travel? And so I kind of started understanding why.
With this new understanding came fear. Mackenzie started having nightmares about ICE.
They come and like break into the house almost like a movie. And then we know that they're coming, but we're all hiding in the house behind the TV. And then they find like my dad, and like I'm standing hiding away, but I still see him, and they're just like taking him away.
That was in 7th grade. She's older now. But the nightmares returned when Trump took office again, and she started overhearing her parents arguing. The situation was back.
Do you guys ever talk about it amongst yourselves?
I actually don't think we've talked about it.
Yeah, no, we don't really talk about it.
I think that we both do the same thing where we
try to like avoid it in conversation.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever like brought it up willingly just to talk. Because it's just like, we're going to sit there and be sad.
Instead, they dealt with the tension in the house by distracting themselves.
I think there was at one point Mackenzie had a running phase where she ran every night.
I ran every night during the wintertime because, like, Trump had just won, and then all these things were just sending in my head.
And she doesn't like running in the lake. She doesn't like people looking at her while she runs.
Exactly.
So when it'd get dark, she would run and I would ride my bike next to her because I cannot run for anything. Like, it's so bad. But yeah.
Do you guys talk too?
I think when I would be walking, we would talk, but yeah, it would mostly be about school drama.
They'd run and bike for as long as they could until it was too late to be out. And only then would they go home, traipse past their parents watching the evening news, and go upstairs.
It's not like I don't care about what's going on, it's more like, it's like just sad, and it's like, well, like if you're gonna be sad forever, or like you're gonna block it out and just move on or something.
But the Trump administration did not want anyone to block out what they were doing. They wanted their immigration policies splashed across headlines and social media. They wanted them embedded in the nation's psyche, especially in families like this one. In March, the headlines were, Kilmar Abrego Garcia was mistakenly deported from Maryland to the notorious C-Cop prison in El Salvador, along with 260 other people. The Trump administration added a self-deport button to the Customs and Border Protection app. Meanwhile, Mackenzie was working weekends at Jersey Mike's. Bella was on the wrestling team. She and Fidel practiced grappling in the living room. He drove the girls to soccer games most weekends, cheering them on from the sidelines. Jenny taped little cards all over the front door on red construction paper. What to do if ICE comes knocking? Bella's 15th birthday was coming up, her quinceañera year, a big deal. Fidel and Jenny kept asking her about plans and ideas for the party, but she just kept pushing it off. At one point, her parents even asked her, do you want a quince or a car instead? Quince, she said.
I wanted one, but then I was thinking about it, and I was like, what if he's not actually, like, there for it? Like, the dad is, like, a big part of a quince. So I was like, what if he's, like, not even there to, like, celebrate it with me? Do I really, like, want that? And I was like, I don't want a quince without him. So I didn't want to go through, like, all the trouble of planning it and then him not being there. So I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. So
she called it off.
I was not happy with that, you know. It's like, I just want to do the party. I just want to see Isabella happy. But it is what it is, you know. We need to plan in everything and have that stress. And for some reason happen, and they're like, oh, your dad is not going to be there in the party. I think that would be a pretty bad thing to happen.
Valerie Kipnis, coming up, the
pressure in the family increases, and the kids overhear something they haven't heard before. That's in a minute. Chicago Public Radio, when our program continues.
Support for This American Life comes from Squarespace. Their AI-enhanced website builder, Blueprint AI, can create a fully custom website in just a few steps, using basic information about your industry, goals, and personality to generate premium quality content and personalized design recommendations. And get paid on time with branded invoices and online payments. Plus, streamline your workflow with built-in appointment scheduling and email marketing tools. Head to squarespace.com/American for 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Support for This American Life comes from Mint Mobile. At Mint Mobile, their favorite word is no. No contracts, no monthly bills, no hidden fees. Plans start at $15 a month. Make the switch at mintmobile.com/American. That's mintmobile.com/American. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
This message comes from Capital One. Banking with Capital One helps you keep more money in your wallet with no fees or minimums on checking accounts and no overdraft fees. Just ask the Capital One bank guy. It's pretty much all he talks about, in a good way. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
This American Life. Today's program, Under One Roof. Stories of families going through experiences where different family members see things very differently from each other. We're in the middle of Valerie Kipnis' story about the Rivera family trying to figure out if they should self-deport. We pick up in the spring.
The stalemate between Jenny and Fidel was getting worse. Every day, Jenny went online, trying to think through a possible move. She scrolled through houses in Mexico, tried to find towns they could afford with expat communities. She looked up English language schools for the girls, who don't speak Spanish. She showed all this to Fidel, and he went along with it, begrudgingly. He didn't think it was necessary. And all these months of pressure, of arguing, culminated in this one fight, when Jenny and Fidel found themselves standing across from each other in the living room, yelling. No one can remember what started the fight. What they do remember is the yelling.
I think the kids upstairs, and they hear that stuff.
How do you know?
I'm pretty sure they hear. We yelling pretty loud stuff. You know, we yelling pretty loud. Each other. It's like, I'm thinking in the top of my head, it's like, aren't you crazy? It's not going to happen. We yelling each other.
Was that unusual for you?
Yes, that is unusual because, like say, 17 years, we never yelling each other, right? So it's that is when my head start thinking like she's over stressed. And it's like, now is when my head start to kick in. It's like, I need to do something, you know, I need to start thinking.
The truth was, Fidel's resolve was starting to unravel. He had always believed that until job sites near him got raided, he was okay. There was nothing to worry about. But by the spring, ICE arrests in North Carolina had more than doubled since the same time last year. He started counting heads at work. Was anyone missing? He started getting nervous whenever he was driving or when he saw a cop. In May, the Trump administration created Project Homecoming, offering people $1,000 and a free plane ticket to leave the country. They regularly posted triumphant videos on social media of agents with gators and guns, blasting doors, raiding people's homes and workplaces, of people in shackles being led onto planes, often to the tune of trolling music. Fidel watched those videos and others that were going viral, and they had the effect on him that the Trump administration probably wanted. They scared him.
I think I saw it in the TV when the kids separated with the parent, that videos. Where they grab the mom and separate the mom and the kids stay crying, or the mom never coming back and the kids thinking, what am I going to do? It's like, I don't want that feeling for my kids. I don't want to give them that feeling.
One day, Mackenzie saw reports on social media that ICE was in their area. She texted her parents. Fidel texted her back a goofy face emoji and, "Don't worry about it." But it bothered him that she was thinking about this stuff. I called him in June to check in. His friend's brother, who worked nearby, his job site had just been raided. And Fidel was preoccupied with two bills in front of the North Carolina legislature that would force state agencies, like Highway Patrol, to cooperate with ICE.
Almost all last year when Jennifer told me, it's like, hey, when it starts to making a plan, as I go, I don't think it's nothing going to happen. But now it's, especially with these two bills, it's like, oh, I think my wife is right.
Wow, Fidel, last time that you and I spoke, you were kind of like, I don't know, she's a bit dramatic. Like, I don't know if I need to do this.
Yeah.
It's a big change.
Yes, it's, you know, every day I was like a little bit processing. It's like, I need to start thinking and like, I need to like change my switch.
The last straw for Fidel was alligator Alcatraz.
I'm not going to be in one of that places. That is my switch. When Jennifer told me 5 months ago, hey, they're going to build detention centers. And I told her, it's like, are you crazy? They're not going to build. And 3 months later, it's like, we got the first one, you know, and I'm pretty sure maybe it's going to be more.
After all those months, all those conversations, Fidel finally agreed that he needed to leave. Maybe with the family, but probably alone. So in June, he sat Jenny down.
The Saturdays or Sundays, we sit on the couch in the mornings. And I told her, it's like, okay, fine, I'm going. I gotta go. Yeah. And it's like, you sure? And I say, yes. Like, the face changed right away.
Like she was relieved?
Like a relief in her face, like, I think finally he understand, like, finally. Yeah, but, yeah, it's good, it's fine.
This is what Jenny had been asking for all along. She's had such a hard time watching the Trump administration's war against immigrants escalate.
But I've already been living in that fear and panic for 16 years, and I can't take any more. And maybe if I was a different person, I could wait it out. But I'm not. I am who I am.
Something I think a lot is like people who do support Trump, like if they were to think about this, they would feel like this is the point. It's for people to be scared. It's for people to leave, to self-deport, right? And it feels like, is there a part of you that feels like this is like admitting, like raising the white flag and being like, you won or no?
Yeah. Feels like you're giving up. It absolutely does. But if you'd been living in the purgatory that we've been in for all of these years, and you weren't able to make any plans for your future, for your kids' future, for your life, at some point, everybody's going to raise that white flag. And so I am. I just can't do it anymore.
Meanwhile, Fidel had spent decades feeling like, even though he entered the country illegally, he was here now. And he'd do things by the book. Work hard at his job, pay into Social Security he'll never get back, support his kids' soccer team and Girl Scout troops, hoping that the people of America would see what he and so many other people were doing, that they were already contributing to this country, and embrace them and make them full citizens. But now, he realized, that deal was never going to come. In fact, a lot of people didn't even want him here. He couldn't stop thinking about how hard he'd worked to make it in this country, picking oranges and tobacco. He'd started as a sweeper at his electrical company, worked his way up for years.
I think that is one of the reasons like I feel like angry. It's because you are in the top of your career.
Fidel's at the peak of his career, running projects and crews.
Like, I work so hard. I work so hard, you know, work, start from the bottom and go all the way up. And now I'm going to start again. But now the difference is 50 years old. I'm not 30 years old. My legs is not going to be the same, and my hands is not going to be the same.
Next, Fidel and Jenny told the girls their dad would leave after Christmas. And the girls didn't really take it seriously. They'd been talking about Fidel leaving for months. This just felt like another update, so far away. For months, Jenny had been gaming out their Mexico options, and they weren't great. There was the money. She had just a few more years, 5 years, before she could get her full pension. If she moved away now, they could live comfortably in Mexico, but probably never could come back to live in the U.S. again. They couldn't afford it. So she decided she probably wouldn't move. It wasn't worth it. As for the girls, she couldn't find them a public school with a good English-speaking program. But she wanted this to be a family decision. So Jenny called the girls into the living room for a family meeting.
We were all sitting downstairs over there on the couches. I'm sitting in the middle, and my mom's like over there on that couch by herself, and my dad's sitting next to me. And I
think I'm on the floor.
Yeah, I think you're on the floor.
Jenny held up her iPad. On it was the listing for a house in Mexico. She was like, check out this house I found. Maybe we could all move down to Mexico together. Would you want to live there? Go to school there? Mackenzie, the older sister, was the first to respond.
I think I said no to begin with. I was like, I don't want that. Didn't we have a whole thing, Bella?
She was so adamant that she did not want to move. Like,
oh,
she
was... It was bad. I remember not wanting to leave the country at all. Because, yeah. I mean, this is my only place that I've been born here. Raised North Carolina. Yeah. So it was like, you're going to make me leave when I've dedicated my work and my school to North Carolina and to United States? That didn't make any sense. I said, I don't want to leave. It doesn't make any sense for me to want to go because I'm like, this is my senior year. This is my last year at the school. You're not giving me enough time. And then my mom got mad and she responded at me. Your dad is like dealing with this. It's causing me stress. It's causing the family stress. It's like intense around here because of what's going on. And then Bella didn't say anything. I don't think my dad's really said anything. I think me and my mom were like just rapid firing against each other. Mm-hmm. And then Bella kind of came and defended me, I guess. She was like, I see why Mackenzie doesn't want to go. And you need to just let her be for a little bit. And my mom was like saying, oh, you need to come back here. We still need to talk. And then my dad probably said the same thing. And I was like, I don't really have anything to say. I don't want to go. And I don't want to hear about all your plans about moving. I said no to everything in general, like moving, thinking about moving, thinking of my dad leaving, thinking about the house, thinking about like, I don't know, everything. I was like saying, I don't want anything to happen. I just want it to stay how it is.
I mean, I was chill with whatever. Like, honestly, that's what I said. I was like, I don't really care what happens. Like, I do care, I do, but you can literally take me out of the country. I could care less where I go. Like, I'll stay here, I'll leave. I'll do online school, I don't know. I didn't really, like, care for it. So, I do care. Stop looking at me like that.
Why are you looking at her like that?
I'm not looking at her like anything. Like, she just, like, sounds, like, weird.
I was going to do whatever my mom thought was best. Like, leaving or saying, that's what I was going to do. And I get why Mackenzie didn't want to leave either. Like, I think my mom was really upset about the fact that she didn't want to leave, but I get why she didn't, because she is literally, like, 1 year away from 18. And you're not going to, like, really make any new friends at a new school for senior year.
Jenny had always thought that this was where the girls would land. The girls felt like Jenny was asking a question she already had the answer to. Fidel sat there quietly during this whole conversation, not saying much at all.
Did you secretly wish that everyone said, okay, let's all go, or no?
Well, honestly, yeah, I say, yeah, everybody, let's go. You know, like, if Mackenzie say, yeah, we can go, and Bella say, yeah, we can go, and Jennifer say, yeah, we can go, it's like, in the back of my head, sure, let's go. But that's like a movie stuff. In the real life, it's not gonna happen.
Fidel's sister went to see the house in Mexico. It's 4 bedrooms with a small pool, not far from the beach. She called him afterwards and told him it was really nice, a smart investment. When Fidel heard, his heart dropped. There was no backing out now. He'd have to be there to sign the documents in September. In 3 weeks, he was really leaving. Jenny was out of town and asked Fidel to be the one to tell the kids he'd be leaving in 3 weeks. He was nervous to tell them, so he kind of sidestepped the whole conversation. Just said, so you know I might be leaving, right? They were like, yeah, that's what we've been talking about. And then he dropped it. A few days later, Jenny called the girls.
And then I'm sitting on the couch one day, and my sister's on a call with my mom, and then my mom says something about him leaving in September. And then Mackenzie tells me, you know, Fief's leaving in like mid-September. And I was like, what?
And then she goes and checks her calendar on the phone. She's like, that's next month.
Yeah, I was like, what the heck, guys? I didn't know this.
I visited the girls in August, weeks before her scheduled departure. Mackenzie and Bella were processing this sudden new reality in real time.
I mean, like, in a year, I had time to, like, get myself kind of, like, ready for it. Like, I could spend a little bit more time with my dad, like, but he's leaving in a month, and there's not really much you can do in a month with your dad.
And that's literally how probably I'm going to think about it. When he's gone, I could have done more.
Yeah.
It's like he's just going to disappear. Like, he's going to be here one day, and then he's going to be gone.
They were just starting to get their minds around it. For their whole lives, it had been the four of them. Now Fidel would be gone. What would graduation look like? And what about wrestling on the weekends? And soccer, which was such a big part of their lives. Fidel was the soccer parent. He'd go to every game.
So I realized he's not going to be there for, like, another tournament. So.
Yeah, we have old soccer season. He's not going to be here.
Well, he'll be here for, like, the first part of it. Barely. I hope at least he gets to come to, like, one more game. Maybe.
He'll be going to a couple. But, yeah.
I remember it was the other day, and my mom was still gone, and she was gone, and then my dad was, like, in some place. I don't know. He was outside or something, and I realized she's going to college next year. My mom's the only one that's going to be here because my dad's going to be gone. So this is what my life is going to be like for, like, 3 more years. Like, I'm not going to, like, have anybody to just, like, talk to. So, yeah.
You guys are spreading telepathic messages to one another. What are they?
No, I'm not spreading telepathic. I'm just sad because I didn't even, like, really think about that. Okay, I guess I didn't think about how Bella was going to be here all by herself without people.
Yeah. Well, I'll have my sports to, like, distract me from things. And I'll probably, like, go to the gym or something. I have my friends and everything. And I talk to my best friend about, like, we'll tell each other everything. But she's not going to be the same as my sister.
Yeah, I guess. That's the same for me. I don't tell my friends everything. I mostly just tell Bella everything.
The plan was, Jenny would stay with the girls. She would work for 5 more years so she could get her pension, retire. Then she'd join Fidel in Mexico, in the city of Merida, in a nice little neighborhood with lots of expats. Far from his family in Mexico, but that's sort of what he wanted. He didn't want to feel like a failure, coming back to the same place all these years later. Jenny and the girls would visit him on school breaks. As his departure date approached, the girls started hugging their dad a lot more. Bella even watched one of his favorite TV shows with him, The Voice. Fidel's been acting differently too. He's imparting all the last-minute wisdom he can think of. How to change the car oil, how to fix the stove, how to get the barbecue to work just right.
Make sure you know what is a screwdriver and you know what is a wrench. But that is this part that got saddening, like angry because I'm going to leave my kids. I think that is the stuff when I got angry with myself. It's like, oh man, I need to leave my kids.
How do you think your relationship will be if you're not over here?
That is going to be like a challenge. She's going to be here, I'm going to be there. And, you know, some days they're going to feel alone and some days I'm going to feel alone. And she's going to be, I'm pretty sure some days she's going to be really frustrated because she got two teenagers and I'm going to be over there by myself, like no, pretty much no responsibilities, you know. She's going to have all the work.
He sucks talking on the phone. He does. I love my husband. He has a lot of great qualities, but he's the on the phone. He's like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. It is 100%, 100% going to suck for the next 5 years. There's no question about it. I wake up in the morning and I have my coffee while I talk to my husband. And I talk to him before I go to bed at night. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to manage without him. I really don't.
Can you imagine your life there?
I see my house, big house, empty. I think my only way to spend my time is working. Like, work the most I can. Like, 12 hours, 13 hours, 14 hours.
Why? So you don't have to be alone in the house, or why?
Yeah, I don't need to be alone, and I don't need to be depressed or thinking of something else. Just stay busy working.
Since Trump took office, 1.6 million people have self-deported, at least according to the Trump administration. The $1,000 that they offer anyone who self-deports, Fidel refused it. He found it insulting. He didn't want his name part of any official list being used to prove Trump's success. Instead, he decided his own terms of departure. When and how.
I can leave for the front door, not the back door. You know, I can live in my own terms. I live happy. I leave my family happy.
He had planned to take off quietly, but Jenny and the girls refused to let him disappear without a trace, as if he hadn't been here all this time. So they threw a farewell Fidel party, invited all his friends, his coworkers, and their neighbors to celebrate the last 3 decades. On the day of the party, he disappeared for a while. When he showed back up, he had a massive piñata of Donald Trump, custom made. They hung it in the backyard. Fidel swung at it, laughing. And Bella finished it off. Fidel left in October. He pushed back his departure date so he could be there for his 17th wedding anniversary and for the first soccer tournament of the season.
Valerie Kipnis is a producer on our show. A week after Fidel left, Jenny heard from the school that a father of 2 kids there was picked up by ICE and is in detention now.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Our program was produced today by Lily Sullivan. Dana Chivas edited Valerie's story. The people who put together today's show include Fia Benin, Michael Comedy, Emmanuel Jochi, Suzanne Gabber, Cassie Halley, Connor Joffrey Waltz, Seth Lind, Mary Marge Locker, Tobin Lowe, Catherine Raimondo, Joe Nelson, Nadia Raymond, Anthony Roman, Ryan Rummery, Alyssa Shipp, Christopher Sutala, and Diane Wu. Our managing editors, Sarah Abdurrahman, our senior editors, David Kestenbaum, our executive editors, Emmanuel Berry. Special thanks today to Kathy Kapp, Ashley de Acevedo at American Families United, Vanessa Dohakis Torres, and Belle Woods. Heather Gay, who you heard at the top of the show, has a new documentary series about the Mormon Church that premiered this week called Surviving Mormonism. It's on Bravo. This American Life is delivered to public radio stations by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. A reminder, if you like our show, if you listen to us a lot, please consider signing up as a This American Life partner. Do it for the stuff you get, bonus episodes, an archive of greatest hits right in your podcast feed, ad-free listening, or do it simply because you want us to be able to keep making the show. Join at thisamericanlife.org/lifepartners. Support for This American Life comes from Keurig Coffee Makers, bringing families together and defying the Mormon God for 30 years. I'm kidding. They're not an underwriter. Thanks as always to our program's co-founder, Mr. Tori Malatia, who loved his mother like crazy. Thought she was the best. Until that day that he walked into her kitchen and saw a certain appliance there.
And a good mom doesn't have a Keurig.
I'm Eric Glass. Back next week with more stories of This American Life.
But I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Next week on the podcast of This American Life, a teacher hands her class a white cardboard box. It's closed. They can shake it, but they can't open it. And they have to guess what's inside. And then she takes the box away.
And I get sick when I'm wondering.
You get sick?
I'm allergic to wondering.
Stories of people who just want to know. Next week on the podcast or on your local public radio station.
This message comes from Schwab. At Schwab, how you invest is your choice, not theirs. That's why when it comes to managing your wealth, Schwab gives you more choices. You can invest and trade on your own. Plus, get advice and more comprehensive wealth solutions to help meet your unique needs. With award-winning service, low costs, and transparent advice, you can manage your wealth your way at Schwab. Visit schwab.com to learn more.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.